lines, but just to be clear, they're slightly different from what they are. We'll be talking shit later.
Welcome to Strange Familiars. If you've seen something strange, something paranormal, a cryptid, ghost, a UFO, and you want to tell your story, you can email us, strangefamiliarspodcast@gmail.com. This is episode 103. It's a bonus episode for everybody. Hope you enjoy it. Tonight, I will be talking with Phil. Phil's an author and a podcaster and a musician, and we do talk a little bit about that, but he also describes a very intense sleep paralysis experience where he encountered some entity that talked to him. It's very, very creepy, and of course there's a possible flannel man encounter too. Okay, we're talking with Phil, who has a couple things to share with us, including something that sounds like the Tendrils of Inky Shadow episode that we talked about before, and possibly a flannel man, or certainly someone strange in flannel. So, what do you want to start with?
I guess why don't we can start with the Inky Tendrils, since that was what had me send my first out of like 14 consecutive rapid fire emails, and then we can work our way over to the flannel man story.
Sounds good.
Yeah, so this happened when I was a teenager. I was probably about 15 or 16 years old, and I was living at my parents' house. It was it was basically a single story kind of ranch style house. My dad had converted the attic into my parents' bedroom, and then the kids, we had our bedrooms at the far end of the house. So there's a big, long hallway that I sprinted down many times at night as a kid because it was long and seemed very scary. There's something about the long corridor at night. And so our bedrooms were at the end. As I recall, one, if not both, of my sisters were already off in college or living outside the house. I was, in bed at night. And I kind of woke up, but I was in sort of that sort of twilight space where I was kind of coming out of a dream. Someone was coming down the hallway. Our hallway was kind of creaky. There were certain spots that creaked and popped. So I heard that. And in my head, I was thinking, okay, my sister's home. And she's, coming down to my bedroom. That's when I opened my eyes and I kind of saw like a dark shape standing in the doorway. And I was still kind of half in the bag, right? And then this low kind of guttural voice. It was almost silly in quality. When you kind of make your voice all kind of gravelly, and I won't do it now because I probably won't be able to speak for the rest of this conversation, but you kind of do kind of like a fake kind of demonic kind of voice. That's basically what it sounded like to me. And it just said, "I love you." And then it started laughing. And so I took it as my sister was being silly, maybe playing a joke on me. So I said, "I love you." I said it back. I said it in the same voice, but I kind of had a bit more of a mocking kind of lilt to it, if you will. Mm-hmm. And that's when things started happening very fast. All of a sudden, this presence that was in the door rushed toward the bed. And the act of whatever happened in that sort of transference of energy there from it moving from the doorway to the side of the bed snapped me awake. Like I was absolutely, I will swear to this day that I was wide awake at that point. And of course, it was not a good presence. It just felt bad to me. It just felt bad. And the only thing I think I could think of was, I'm going to turn on the light. Screaming wasn't even the first thing that came to mind. I figured I'll scream once I get the light on.
Right.
but I couldn't move. And it wasn't that I felt like I was paralyzed. I was kind of thinking back on this, and I was doing some research for one of the podcasts I do, and one thing that struck me is a lot of people, when they reference sleep paralysis, they say they feel like a pressure like on their chest, or they kind of feel like a pressure on their chest and almost like a strangulating kind of feel. Mm-hmm. this was around my arms, and I distinctly remember it. And I don't often, this is probably the first time I've ever really talked about this in great deal in a long time. And I was walking the dogs early, and I was kind of psyching myself up saying, you're probably going to creep yourself out talking about this again, but you can get through it. It felt like two hands, one on each arm, just above my elbow, kind of at the bottom of my bicep, holding me down, like pinning me to the bed. And so I could kind of move my body a little bit, but not enough to turn over, because the way my lamp was kind of situated, I didn't have enough reach for the arm closest to the lamp. My angle would be much better if I could just roll over and reach for the lamp. And at which point I hear this voice is now in my ear and saying something to the effect of, don't mock me. I could either kill you or I could destroy you very easily. And as I felt the voice kind of close to my ear, it almost felt like the pressure kind of eased up on one side of me. And that's when I was able to kind of roll over, reach that bedside lamp and turn it on. And the moment I turned it on, out of the corner of my eye, it looked like someone dropping ink into like a glass of water, or, when you're dyeing Easter eggs and you drop that pellet in, or you drip food coloring into liquid. Mm-hmm. It looked like that, but in reverse. So it was like this dark, these inky tendrils, if you will, but it kind of sucked and folded in on itself. And then everything kind of felt normal again. And in looking back too, and this is something I kind of had forgotten about until I was getting into really thinking about this to try to coax out as many details as I could. But, that area of the room where the figure was standing was just darker than I was accustomed to in my bedroom, if that makes any sense. Like I had a nightlight on in there, but that whole side of the room just looked like it was just blanketed in darkness. Once everything kind of receded, things went kind of back to normal, and I was still terrified. And I did try to scream as I was contemplating that rollover once I felt the pressure let up.
Right.
But I had no voice. Like some sounds kind of came out, but I think that was more, I was just too scared to make any more noise than I was actually coming out of me. But yeah,
I know that feeling, that you almost like whimpering that sound.
Yeah. Oh, it was the strangest, and I don't think I've ever duplicated that sound to this day, but it was so just, it didn't sound like a sound that had, that could ever possibly come out of my mouth, yet it was.
Wow. This is so creepy. I mean, this is a really, really creepy to have it start off with whatever, saying, I love you.
Yeah.
And then escalate, so quickly.
Yeah. And there was just a weird connotation. Again, this is looking back, and this was after I examined the episode after it had happened, but there was this sincerity in the words, I love you, but there was a sort of a dark portent to it, if that makes any sense. I have no doubt whatever was saying that it loved me, right? That felt like an accurate statement, but just not in the way that we typically express love or say, what love means to us as human beings, if that makes any sense at all. That's the best way I can describe it.
Yeah, and creepy though.
And there was a certain feel to the presence, something that I to this day I can't put it into words, but there was a recognizable quality to it. And I only say that because many years later, maybe see if it was about 16 then, and maybe 10 or more years later, this was when I was living at a house in my previous marriage. At one point, this might have been over the span of a month, maybe more, it was before I had kids, some strange things started happening around the house, and it kind of coincided with a certain level of the tension in that marriage at that time. I can't remember exactly what was going on, but I remember there was a lot of unhappiness and kind of disquiet in the house. And then some weird things started happening. I would hear noises downstairs. The dogs were getting spooked. The cats were like acting so strangely. One night, I just went to check things out, and I made my way down to the first floor, and all was cool. And then I made my way down into the basement, and then I started to get that feeling, you know, where you instantly kind of you go cold, but it's not like a temperature thing. It's almost like a sickly cold kind of feel. Mm-hmm. And I made my way into like the laundry room, and there's like a sub pump kind of well in there in the back. And the only way I can describe the way it felt was the way that like it felt before that thing kind of rushed toward me in my bedroom. Was this sort of same kind of dark feeling of something being there. And it felt just so familiar. And I was sure that whatever it was the same thing that was in my bedroom as a teenager. And I quickly went back upstairs and got back in bed and just tried to ignore it. But things just felt so off in that house that finally, one night I got the nerve to go downstairs. And I said, I don't know who you are or what you are, but you're not welcome here, and you need to leave. And after that, it was a completely different house.
Wow.
Yeah. That story, I think I've only shared to one human being ever. That's the first time, and that's the first time I've ever said that on a microphone for sure.
The creature, the thing, the entity, the feeling I'm taking away is, and correct me if this is me, you know, reading too much or making too much of it.
Of course.
But it's, I love you in the way that a parasite loves its host.
Yeah, something along those lines. I don't think you're reading too into it. I just, it was, that's close to it. It's that sort of, you know, that kind of just unhealthy, but it was almost like, there's this kind of missing gap of not your understanding, but I think my understanding where I can't fully comprehend exactly what it was, but it was not good.
Right.
Yeah. And if that makes, again, not sound like a broken record, if that makes any sense. You know?
No, this stuff is, it's difficult to explain on any level, much less to sort of reason out of it. So the next night, the couple nights after it happened, I mean, were you terrified to sleep there?
Oh, I slept with all the lights on in my bedroom. I didn't put the hallway light on. Because I didn't say anything about this to my parents. I know it would have freaked my mother out, who was, you know, I was raised Catholic, and you know, we couldn't even really talk about Ouija boards in the house because my mom just didn't want to hear about it. And again, she's a very rational woman, but just wanted nothing to do with it. And I figured I would scare the shit out of everyone. And can I say that? Can I drop the S-bomb? Because I just did.
It's fine.
Yeah, but so I didn't turn on the hallway light, but I turned on the light in the bathroom. I turned on the lights in my bedroom. I made sure the door to my sister's bedroom was closed because there was no one in there. I made sure the door that my grandmother's bedroom used to be, made sure that was closed. And then I actually slept with my door all the way open, though, because I figured if it was ajar or closed, then something could push it open and then kind of push me over the brink of insanity in the process. So, but yeah, it was a little while before I was able to figure out how to sleep again. And you know, as a younger guy too, like as a kid, you know, I was convinced that I would hear things at night. I was convinced that things kind of fell off my shelves, like my toys on their own. Whether or not that was just a kid being a kid and freaking themselves out, I've always had, you know, I will be the first to admit I've always had a very active imagination, but in the same breath, I also feel like I was also very kind of, because of that, more open to these kinds of experiences. And I think there's something to be said that, you know, the more open you are, the more kind of free and open your mind is to these things, I think the more receptive you are to having either them happen or kind of noticing it happening around you.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because when I was younger, you know, I would notice things like this more, be it things falling over in my room, you know, minor things, not like the big incident. And then I think as I kind of progressed in life, and I think the weight of life stresses began weighing me down, I feel like that part of my brain was kind of closed off more to the experiences, if that makes any sense. And I think just now in recent years, I've been thinking more about this stuff, and my interest has kind of been peaking up again, and I wonder, you know, how that's gonna play out if I continue to pursue this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I dropped it, and I don't think it was fully consciously. I think it was circumstances of life for the most part, but when my kids were real young, I just, you know, I just kind of dropped it all, and not, there wasn't a particular thought that went into it, like, I'm going to stop doing this stuff now. It was more like, you know, just everything's going on.
I've got two
young kids, and, you know, coming back to it, I've wondered how, you know, it would react and so forth, and it's been okay. Like, my kid, I guess my son's skeptical enough where he's not worried about it. My daughter just keeps saying, I know I'm going to see Flannel Man. I don't want to see Flannel Man.
Well, that's funny because so after I was, you know, I got divorced, and then I met an amazing woman, and we shared an apartment together, and the kids were there with us every other weekend at that time. But we were both convinced, and she would murder me if she knew I was talking about this in the house, because I'm not allowed to talk about this subject in the house. But we were very much convinced that that apartment itself had some kind of entity in it. She had a ton of experiences there when we were living there, mostly when I wasn't around. And there were a few that happened when we were both there. There were times where my youngest daughter, she was, I think, 3 at the time, would hang out in the closet chatting with her friend in there. And of course, that sounds that's a total trope. Trust me, I understand that. But but it was, there was definitely something going on in there, and that was, I think, the first time that I had kind of had things happen again since I was a younger guy. But to that end, you know, like your daughter saying, I don't want to see Flannel Man. My wife is like, I don't want anything coming to this house. I don't want to, so you can't say the G word in this house.
So,
which I don't think I actually said the G word, so I think we're still good.
Other than, took me a minute. I was like, oh, ghost. Okay.
You're allowed to say it.
G. I'm going through my head. I'm going 10 other places, you know, going through a whole list of alien races. And like, which one begins with G, you know? Other than the incident that you described where you went down to the basement or the bottom floor and felt that it was probably the same entity or something like it in there. Did you ever run across this thing again or anything like it?
Nope. Not since then. That was probably 2007. 2007 sounds about right. So not since then.
Just those kind of two instances, one in your teens and one in your 20s.
Yeah. So I made it through my 30s without another incident. So I think, knock on wood, let's keep that trend going.
Yeah, right. Oh, it's so creepy, though. I'm trying to think if I've had any other ones where they've spoken in English to people. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. these bedroom invaders, nighttime invaders, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
And I'm drawing a blank right now. I can't think of any. And I think it's almost creepier, I think, than just to have it there, you know? I mean, it's creepy enough to be held down or pinned down, or which, you know, a lot of people have reported in one way or another.
Yeah.
But to have the sort of speech that goes with it is super creepy.
Well, and I didn't expect to hear anything else. I was, you know, I was terrified, right, when the presence rushed to the bed. But my rational mind was like, okay, something very scary is happening right now. You might still be dreaming. Certainly, whatever spoke to you in the doorway, that was part of the dream, and now you're awake, and this is going to be over soon. And then when it wasn't over, like instantly, and then the speech kind of resumed, that's when I was about out of my skin with terror. And I've never been more afraid in my entire life than I was, you know, in that moment.
When you saw it in the doorway, did it have more or less a humanoid shape?
Yeah, it was more or less a humanoid shape. It was tall. I mean, it was taller than my dad, who's 6'2". I mean, it was almost up to the, you know, to the top of the door frame. And then beyond that, I couldn't really make out too much else about the shape. The arms, from what I recall, seemed a little bit longer than normal, but it almost seemed like a shadow kind of effect, if that makes any sense, where the light is kind of affecting the length, at least in the way the thing kind of appeared. And again, that's my mind's eye recounting it, but it seemed a little slightly disproportionate, but not so much so that it was wildly, you know, inhuman looking.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I don't know if I'd trade the grays for that.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
it's not something I either one. I'd like to experience or experience again. So that's. But wow, that's incredible. That's incredible. Well, I hope you never have to see that again.
Yeah, I hope so too. I mean, it's again. I've never talked about it in this capacity. So it's actually felt better than I thought it would. Mm-hmm. I thought I would be, and again, when we end the call, the fear might kind of descend again. But right now, it's been okay, you know. And it's funny because I've hinted at these incidents, and you know, I'm a writer of fiction, you know, I write horror, sci-fi, and some of this stuff from that experience, I kind of sprinkled into one of my books, not like overtly, but you know, I was okay, like facing it like that way, that if I work it into a book, then I can kind of be okay with that. That was a thing that happened. But it's a whole different thing when you are talking about it face on and really kind of sitting there and thinking back about those details. And it's amazing how much you do actually remember, even when you've kind of cut off some of those things for a little while, how quickly it jumps back into your memory.
Yeah. There's a special kind of presence when these things happen. I've described it as more real than reality in some ways.
Yeah, I've heard you say that.
And it just drives it home and locks it in, I think.
Yeah.
What I can remember, you know, there are gaps that mm-hmm. that I can't. The fact that you're able to write about it in a fictional way,
mm-hmm.
to me, that it almost mirrors kind of. So my first book, I didn't talk about anything of my own experience. Actually, my first three books,
yeah.
You know, the two Bigfoot books and Beyond the Seventh Gate, my first one, I didn't talk about my own experiences at all. I didn't even bring it up. And then, you know, at some point, Soraya and a few other people were like, why don't you talk about your own stuff? You got some pretty weird stuff going
on. Yeah, yeah.
And yeah. In my latest book, I started to do that where I felt it was appropriate. But it's very interesting that you sort of, you're doing the fictional equivalent of that. You know, I'll write about somebody else having this experience.
Oh, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Not myself, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, with we're going to talk about my Dudleytown experience with Flannelman in a little bit. Which is funny because that was kind of the side note kind of experience. But you know, I wrote a short story, you know, based on what that experience was. And again, that was another very kind of terrifying experience where I won't say I was like the focal point of whatever forces are in that town. But still, that was something that stuck with me and definitely prevented a lot of sleep.
Oh, well, as good a time as any to go into that.
Yeah, let's go into it. Okay, so and some of your listeners may be familiar with Dudleytown, which is you know the remains. It was once a never flourishing town in, I think it's Cornwall, Connecticut, which is upstate Connecticut. It's this, you know, town deep in the woods. There's nothing left of it to this day, but it was just one of those towns that just could never take hold. And for one reason or another, the residents were either dying out. There was stories of people going insane, just bad juju in Dudleytown. And so I was, you know, took a class in high school called Call of the Wild. And it was essentially a course about how nature informs literature. And looking back on it, I might have mentioned this in my email, I think it was more of just how just, you know, experiencing around us with an open mind, you know, how that has impacted on us as writers, but also opening your mind to, you know, there's a lot more going on around us than I think, you know, that we realize when we just kind of look at it through this sort of tunnel vision of here's what's rational, here's what we understand, that there could be more to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the class culminated in a camping trip to Dudleytown. Previous classes used to camp right inside the ruins of the town, but apparently there were just too many powerful experiences that had happened that they kind of moved the camping, you know, to the outskirts of the town, past the wall, past where there was this, you know, I can't even remember right now off the top of my head, but the kind of avenue through the trees that kind of got you into the town, they would have to camp well outside that. So you hike through the woods during the day, and then you come back and you set up camp, and then you do a night hike to the town, and then you go into the town. And then the teacher leaves individuals, or you can have a small group, in the foundations of different buildings in the town. And then you're there, you can't have your flashlight on, and you sit in the dark for about 10 or 15 minutes to just experience the atmosphere. So on the way there, as we're hiking through the woods, we kind of see what looks like headlights through the trees, which immediately strikes me as very strange because you can't drive up there. You can drive. There's a gate that leads up to the sort of the path that gets you there. The path itself, I think, is a couple miles long, but it's, you know, inaccessible via car. And we first noticed them when we were checking out this. It was like a stone kind of platform. I won't call it an altar, but it was just this strange kind of misplaced piece of concrete that was out there in the woods. And we were there chatting, and then we kind of see these lights. And so it's on the way to the town. So we're walking there, and then a guy, you know, we come up upon a car in the woods, kind of off to the side of the path. And it's a big, I think it was like a greenish color. It was pretty dark out at that point. But one of those just big 1970s, four-door sedans with these just big metal bumpers on it. I remember that very clearly. And there was a man standing next to the car, and he kind of had shaggy-ish hair, not super long, but a little shaggy, was wearing what looked like a knit cap. He had a beard, again, not a very bushy beard, but his face was bearded, and I couldn't make out much else about his features. And he was wearing sort of a green kind of army fatigue-looking jacket almost, and then underneath that, he had a red and I think a red and black pattern flannel shirt that was kind of unbuttoned down to maybe the third button, and then maybe there was like a grayish t-shirt under that, and he was wearing jeans and what looked like boots, and then he was talking to the teacher, and couldn't really hear what they were saying. And then conversation was over, and then he got in the car and he kind of drove off, which again, I can't quite wrap my head around the driving off part. I think he kind of went around the path in the woods, mm-hmm. and then there was no sign or sound of the car after that. And my teacher didn't say anything about it, and no one asked him about it, which looking back, I thought that was kind of weird that no one was at least curious as to what they were saying. Maybe someone did ask him and I just didn't catch wind of it because I had that sort of mounting fear about going into the town. But it was very out of place for this guy in this car to be out there in the woods because there was just no way for him or his car to get up there. And yeah, there are other properties out there, but they are miles and miles away. I mean, not within earshot, not within nothing, not within like seeing lights in the trees from the houses. There's nothing up there. So when I listened to when I started listening to the Flannel Man episodes and I heard the first description of Flannel Man, again, I got that my skin kind of started crawling a little bit. And I said, it could be a coincidence. It might not be. But I think this is worth it enough to send yet another email in about this. But, and that was Connecticut and that was 1997. So that's going quite a while back. But man. That's again,
just the other thing with these Flannel Man things that people are kind of saying, like, well, I didn't know anything about Flannel Man, but this other thing happened, and then I came upon this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which seemed to be completely unrelated, you know, or at least at the time. So, yeah, it could have been, and that's the thing about the flannel shirt. Like, everybody has one, you know? Yeah,
I have one in my closet upstairs.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the description.
it could absolutely be just a dude, you know, yeah. But the fact that they're appearing, you know, time and place close to these other weird things or these other weird places is of great interest to me.
Yeah. Well, and that's what kind of struck me too, is that, if you do some Googling on Dudleytown, it is at least one of the most haunted locations on the East Coast of the United States.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
The Warrens actually were going to take a group of tourists up there back, I think, in the early 90s. They, you know, people paid for this guided tour of Dudleytown with the Warrens, and the Warrens got there. And I don't know what you what your personal opinion is of the Warrens, but Elaine Warren said it's just too much dark energy here, or whatever she said. It's just too bad a place for us to go into and do this. I won't do it. And they refunded thousands and thousands of dollars to these people. So it's this place is no joke. And yet there is this guy in this flannel shirt by this place of supposed great sort of, you know, energy.
Right.
It just is so interesting. And I think it might have been actually the your most latest episode where I think someone mentioned, well, maybe he is. Maybe it's a force that's looking out for us, right? Which would also kind of coincide with the idea that there might be some bad energy in this town. And he said, well, what are you people doing here? Are you planning on staying the night in there? And maybe you shouldn't. Or maybe it could have been that kind of thing where he was just sort of a kind of a protective, you know, this protective soul, just making sure that, that our teacher wasn't getting these these young people into any kind of trouble.
Right.
Who knows?
Did anything weird happen when you were there?
Oh, when we were inside the town, yeah. Oh, yeah. I will 100% admit to it with no shame. I had my eyes squeezed shut the entire 15 minutes we were in there. But when we got in the town, I think it was probably about maybe 70 degrees out. It was late May, I think, when we went out there, and we went out to the town, and we kind of crossed through where this fallen tree was, and we kind of get in through the town proper. You know, with the main street of this town, which again is barely a path through these broken down foundations. And we're standing there getting ready to get split up into our separate groups. And I kid you not, it must have dropped maybe 15 or 20 degrees. That's how it got cold. I mean, at one point I could see my breath. I was, you know, and our teacher was fully prepared. He told us, bring our jackets. It might get cold, but it wasn't sort of a spring night getting cold. It was like within like a minute and a half, 2 minutes, the temperature just drastically changed. And then we kind of were split up, and I went with two friends of mine because, again, I was too afraid to go on my own. And it was weird because there were some strange smells that we passed some foundations. Like I smelled very distinctly like a pipe smoke smell. We passed one foundation where you could see there had been like a basement kind of fireplace. The thing was completely submerged in water, yet there was a very clear kind of smell of like wood that had been recently burning. And again, we're out in the woods, so, you know, that could mean anything, right? But no one else smelled that but me. And again, I feel like I've always kind of had this, and again, this is probably something I've not said to anyone. And since I was a teenager, I've always felt like I've been kind of in tune with some of this stuff. So maybe I was just kind of picking up on some of maybe these residual vibes of this place. So we sat down in our foundation. It was the foundation of the old schoolhouse. And I had my eyes squeezed shut, but it got very quiet once everyone was kind of situated. And it was just totally quiet. No sounds of insects, no sounds of birds, nothing. And then all of a sudden, it was like the woods was kind of waking up around us. I would hear, you know, I heard twigs and stuff breaking. Most distinctly, sound that I heard was it sounded like a screen door kind of creaking open and slamming shut, like someone was coming out of a home. Only thing was there were no doors anywhere close enough that we would be able to hear them. And then after that, there was some other strange noises, some rustling, and this feeling that we weren't alone there. Again, that sense that, you know, the class was there, but then there was someone else there too. After that, it was over. And again, I don't know if I would have seen anything had I been brave enough to keep my eyes open. Looking back, I kind of wish I had kept my eyes open, but I guess that one, you know, they don't let people back up there these days now. So I guess I'll just have to wonder what I might have seen. But man, the vibe there was just so, so very strong.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. And then once we got back outside the town, it was, you know, back to being warm again. And it just was just an unbelievable experience that really sticks with me to this day. My sister actually went up there too, and she had a few strange experiences that we actually talked about in, I think it was in October. I actually interviewed her for one of my podcasts before we actually aired the story that was inspired by Dudleytown. I convinced her to get on the phone with me and to record an interview for my Patreon pledges. So nice. That was interesting, kind of, because her and I, we like kind of loosely talked about it a little bit, but it was something that she never really wanted to talk about, to kind of revisit some of those feelings. Because like you said, it's just like it's branded into your brain. It's, you can lock it up, but it's still in there and it's still vivid and very potent. But again, man, wow.
Wow.
What an experience.
Yeah, I was doing a quick search on Dudleytown and looking at it. You know, they're calling it the Village of the Damned and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
Oh, I want to go there, but you said it's you can't go there anymore.
Yeah, you can't go there anymore. It's too bad. It's too bad because it was just even if nothing, even if there were no sounds or anything, just the vibe, just to feel so different over the span of, you know, a couple hundred feet, it was astounding. That alone, I won't forget. Just such a different feel of energy and sense of, you know, just where you are has changed completely. Mm-hmm. Was unbelievable.
We will get back to the rest of Phil's interview in a bit. For now, I wanted to thank our patrons. Strange Familiars is brought to you by our patrons, without whom we could not make the show. So thank you, patrons. If you'd like to help us continue to make Strange Familiars and get extra content besides, please consider becoming a patron. It's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. $3 a month gets you extra content. We do full extra episodes of Strange Familiars for our patrons, at least one a month, often we do more than one. And just $3 a month gets you that bonus content, as well as special offers and other bonuses. If you want things like t-shirts, stickers, pins, copies of my books and CDs, and more, you can go in at higher levels of support. You can check it all out at Patreon. It's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. If you don't like the idea of a monthly subscription like Patreon, you can help with a one-time donation. Go to strangefamiliars.com and look for the paypal.me link in the show notes. Another way you can help is to like and subscribe wherever you're listening to Strange Familiars and leave us those nice 5-star reviews. Did your classmates report anything, you know, similar?
Yeah, everyone said they heard weird things. I had one classmate say that something touched them, kind of like poked them like in the lower back. And then a couple kids just refused to talk about it.
Hmm.
I think there's about 10 of us, and a couple of them just didn't want to talk about it. They just wanted to go home. I did have someone, actually, I can't remember her name, one of those kind of pain kind of kids that, you know, they think they're, you know, they're awesome. It's kind of popular. You're not supposed to take anything from Dudleytown. I mean, that's sort of the classic, like, you don't take something from a cursed town, right?
Right.
And, you know, the teacher told the stories. He even said, don't take anything, because I've had kids take things in the past and bad things happen to them. Well, what does she do? She took something from the town. The next week, she got into a car accident. 2 days later, unrelated to the car accident, she broke her leg. And so she had someone take the rock back to the town, like, on her behalf, because she couldn't obviously hike in the woods. And then after that, her luck seemed to right itself. So believe it or not, I don't know. But, you know, that was the story going on, that she took this rock from the town. And then these things, you know, started to, you know, bad luck started to hit her.
Yeah.
Well, you won't catch me taking anything from any of these places.
Yeah, I have rocks of from places of good memories.
Well, there you go. Yeah, the place with the good vibes. Yeah, I'll take a rock, but the bad juju, those rocks can stay. You know where they're lying.
Right on. So did you guys end up staying the night then?
Yeah, so we stayed the night. That wasn't too bad. I actually managed to sleep again because the vibe was just so different on the outside. It was just being out in these beautiful woods, and I think just the expense. Kind of the spent adrenaline. I think everyone was just wiped out. That I think no one really had a hard time sleeping. It took me a little while to kind of doze off, but there were three of us in the tent, and so it's safety in numbers. I was kind of sleeping in the middle, so I think I felt fairly safe. That yeah. If anyone was going to get touched by by some supernatural force, it wasn't going to be me because I was not near the sides of the tent. Right. At least that was my reasoning.
Right. Oh, wow. The flannel man being in such close proximity, or the man in flannel.
Right. Yeah. You
know, it's so interesting, though.
Yeah, that just blew me away. It just blew me away. And also, I found interesting, too, is if I'm remembering correctly, because I've listened to a bunch of your podcasts in kind of a short span of time, there seem to be quite a few of these encounters in sort of the mid or late 90s, too, which I also found that kind of interesting, probably coincidental, but I just thought that was kind of
There is definitely I guess we could call it a flap at that time. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's when my wife saw hers.
Yeah, and it was interesting because this is the first I heard of this flannel man was listening to your podcast. So I'm going to have to kind of go out and dig a little bit about this because again, it blew me away to start listening and then have that sort of recollection. So it's just. Well, makes you think. It really does.
It was a thing. I mean, like I said, I read about it on some kind of forum.
Yeah.
Early internet days.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. kind of filed it away. Mm-hmm. And John Keel wrote about it. It's in Mothman Prophecies and one or two of his other books.
Oh, was it in the Mothman?
Yeah. There's one paragraph about a lady who saw some guy in a checkered shirt or something in her.
You know what? Okay. I think I do remember that. I mean, it's been about 10 years since the last time I read that, but that does actually ring a bell now that you mention it.
Yeah, it's not a major, aspect. He just kind of, he notes it, and he notes that it does happen, and then kind of moves on,
So yeah,
it's not like there's a chapter devoted to it.
Right.
But he does have a chapter in another one of his books, I think, Strange Creatures from Time and Space. I forget the name. Mm-hmm, it's one of the ones that's been issued under a couple different titles. But he has a chapter in that one where he talks about these, bedroom visitors and mentions these, checked shirts, he calls them, these checked shirt things.
That's interesting. You know, this whole bedroom visitor thing is, I mean, it's a pretty scary concept. I was thinking if I can postulate a little bit here, and you can totally cut this out if this gets too long. But I was doing a little research for this kind of brief podcast that I do. And I was kind of researching the sleep paralysis thing and there was reading about the scientific studies talking about, the certain inhibitors that, chemicals your brain will release while you're in REM sleep that effectively make your muscles so relaxed that you're paralyzed. And they're not quite sure why this mechanism exists. It might be to prevent injury so you don't get up and run into a wall. I mean, or run off a cliff in, prehistoric times.
Right, fall out of a tree.
And so it got me thinking at first. I'm like, well, I guess so. It's not some supernatural force that's paralyzing us. You got the scientific explanation. And then I got to thinking, I said, well, what if these, bedroom visitors are waiting for, they can kind of sense when there are certain hormonal changes in you and that's when you're most vulnerable. And that's when they choose to come and pay you a visit, that they let the body kind of take care of the paralysis thing for them, and then they can kind of assert their their presence, their force, their suggestion. So,
yeah, and I think there's something to it. I think there's something. It's somehow tied in.
Yeah.
I don't know if I don't think sleep paralysis works as an explanation for all this stuff. It's
right.
It's as Josh says. It's, don't mistake the keyhole for the room.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's a great way of saying it. I think there's something to it. For a while there, I was writing it off. I was, because someone had written and told me, and I just took them at their word that they said that, most people experience sleep paralysis at some point in their life. And then my son did got some statistics recently. He was telling me, mm-hmm. No, it's actually like very few people experience it.
Yeah. Yep.
So the fact that the people that are experiencing it are also experiencing paranormal phenomena of different sort, either during or outside of these sleep paralysis experiences, to me says something. This says something big.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. And it's funny because I noticed that same statistic. Well, there's sort of the verbal, oh, this happens to so many people. And then if you dig a little more, I think you come to, like your son discovered, it's not as prevalent as we might be led to believe, even if there is a mechanism. And really true, sleep paralysis is actually linked to, certain neurological conditions. This is genuine. Actually being unable to move is actually not the nominative, nominal state for your body when it is in that stage of sleep. So that's also kind of interesting too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very and I'm not a neurologist. I don't claim to be. I read a few articles on the internet. I did not stay at a Holiday Inn Express. So I'm not an expert.
You have podcasts plural.
I do a plural. Yeah. So, I got my start podcasting kind of back in the heyday, not at the exact heyday. I started podcasting in 2006. I did a little podcast about writing. And then I podcasted my debut novel as a serialized podcast. It was a haunted space station, we'll call it, story called Crescent. And that actually ended up doing pretty well at the time. There was a lot of buzz around it. And I did a couple other podcast novels as well and kind of developed a pretty big following around that, podcasting my fiction, and then life happened a little later on, and I fell out of podcasting, and my world was kind of turned upside down. And then in 2017, I was still writing, but my writing wasn't really going anywhere other than draft phase, and I wanted to kind of get back out there with the writing, and I looked into Patreon, and I said, well, maybe there's still enough people out there that listen to my podcast originally that they would want to maybe support me and help me get my stories back out there. And that's what happened. And I got a decent enough following on Patreon that I was able to kind of cut back on gigging every single weekend to make extra money on the side. And I was able to devote time into writing again. And so I was able to kind of get the fiction out there again. And then this is kind of a winding path. I'm going to make it as short as possible. This year I decided, hey, to promote my Patreon and some upcoming stuff I have, I'm going to Twitch stream some scary video games in the month of October, namely The Exorcist VR for the PlayStation. And I had so much fun doing that I became kind of a regular streamer. And then in 2019, I said, well, I'm going to actually do a kind of companion podcast to the streaming where I just talk about the gaming experience. And then that evolved when I started playing this game based on Thai folklore, where the podcast suddenly became not just kind of BSing about the game, but I actually started doing research about some of the folklore and then built the podcast kind of around that. And it got legs, and I fell in love with, as I think you, someone who loves doing research, I kind of fell in love with that part of it. It rekindled my passion for all things kind of paranormal. Not that passion ever really faded out, but I don't know why it never dawned on me to consider doing some kind of podcast around it. So that's kind of where I am today with that, at least with that podcast. It's still in its fledgling kind of phase. We're about a dozen episodes in, but it's been a lot of fun, and it's been great to be back out and doing this stuff again. And
what's it called and where can we find it?
So this podcast is called the Phil Rossi Media Scream Stream podcast, and you can find it on iTunes. You could find it on Spotify. If you drop a search for it into like a podcaster like Overcast, it'll come up. There's a couple different ways to get at it. It has its own dedicated feed, but then there's also just the Phil Rossi Media feed as well, which has that podcast and then the free stories. And then, of course, little shameless plug, then there's the Patreon page, which is just patreon.com/Phil Rossi, and then that is kind of gateway to all things me, if anyone has any interest. And make sure your listeners know there's absolutely no pressure to check anything out. I'm just absolutely just tickled and and thrilled to be on your podcast.
No, I didn't know you had a podcast until you mentioned it while we were talking here. So it's not like you were booked to talk about your podcast. So this is me just asking for my own curiosity. I'm finding out about this now. So you wrote me about your stories, not about your podcast. But since you mentioned it, I want to talk about it.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Thank you.
Do you have books published too?
Yeah, so my book Crescent was published in 2009, and my novella Eden was published in roughly the same time frame. Currently, I've kind of parted ways with my small publisher, thinking that, okay, I'm going to take these under my own wing, because I was going to have the follow-up to my novella come out last June, not realizing, oh my gosh, there's a lot of extra work involved in actually getting your book out in print that this small publisher was doing than I realized. So that's kind of stalled that. So if people want to get books directly, they've been coming through me for sort of my back stock, of which there's a few left. But my 2019 goal is to get stuff back into print.
Nice. And do you have a website for yourself personally, or just that Patreon site's the best way to?
Yeah, philrossimedia.com is my main. It's kind of the portal as well. I mean, I do a lot through Patreon, but as you know, I'm also a musician, so I post my gig calendar on that website as well, as along with some other related materials. It's hard being sort of in multiple like kind of media. Figuring out how best to represent yourself and not seem just like you're all over the place, which, if I'm honest, I think I am somewhat all over the place. I try to bring it all together in some way, shape, or form. So with my stories and my podcasts, I produce music along with it to include in the episodes or as sort of extras for the episodes. So songs inspired by the story, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So it kind of keeps me able to do the music, so I'm not sacrificing one for the other, if that makes sense.
Right.
People can play a drinking game with this podcast. There's take a drink anytime he says, if that makes any sense.
Well, for me, I like, having done music for, umpteen years before ever thinking about doing a podcast, I thought this will translate. I thought people who listen to my music will just come to the podcast.
Because, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's similar themes. It's similar enough. And, mm-hmm. That did not happen so much.
I knew that's exactly where you were going. Oh, and I thought it would work the other way around too, that people that were into my books and podcasts would gravitate toward my music. But in some cases, that really hasn't happened. In fact, in 2009, when I was doing, or 2007, when I was first doing the Crescent podcast, and one band that I was in, we released this little folky kind of acoustic EP. And one of my avid podcast listeners went onto iTunes and said, you should really stick to writing books.
Oh.
Yeah. I said, that's cool. All right. You're entitled.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had a couple comments that people, I love his podcast, but ooh, that music, But for the most part, I've actually gained a lot of music fans from the podcast, which I'm super happy about. That's
awesome.
I did not expect it. When it didn't work the other way, I thought, well, right. It won't. The water's not going to flow either direction with this, it's actually been very nice. People have been very, very accepting, and I make some weirdo music, so.
Well, that's fine. That's been the thing with this new kind of iteration of my podcasting experience and putting music out there along with it. People have been, really into it. And with my last book that I did was sort of a vampire cyberpunk kind of mashup, and so I took some, I did a couple actually, and I paid for the rights for a couple covers and kind of did them sort of, dark wave electronic, I did a little minimal techno version of Bela Lugosi, and then people have been really kind of into some of that stuff too, so it's been fun. But I have to ask you, so the music that we hear on Strange Familiars, is that your music?
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Oh, thank you so much.
And obviously, I can find links on the Strange Familiars website to find my way to it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I'm trying to. I had like three different things because I was trying to keep, Stone Breath as a pure band. So mm-hmm. only, stuff I did with the band there. And then I realized like this is a. People don't care. Like, so, right. So I started to put my solo stuff with Stone Breath. So it's all under stonebreath.bandcamp.com now.
Awesome.
So, it's good. And the things that aren't will be eventually, I'll get them there. I just, it's a matter of just porting stuff over from other Bandcamp pages. Eventually.
Which takes time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I haven't messed with Bandcamp yet, but I am, I have a lot of friends who use Bandcamp, so I think as I've committed to finishing some music that's been kind of stalled out for some time to get it up on Bandcamp, I think is my ultimate goal.
As I highly recommend it.
See, you're not the first person that said that, so I'm doing it. It's happening.
They are so artist friendly.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I've never had a better experience with a service like that.
Yeah. Oh, that's good to hear. That's what I need in my life. I need artist friendly. I'm finding these days, I don't have the added time to bang my head against the keyboard trying to get something to work or set something up.
Right.
The more artist friendly, the better.
Yeah, exactly. I'd love to have a dedicated home for Strange Familiars that's, outside of Podbean, but Podbean makes it so easy. They make it so easy that it's kind of like, I don't have time to mess with it. I don't know HTML. So
yeah.
Then I have to mess with other stuff or depend on other people. Well, this is just, they make it so easy for me. So, until something crazy happens and
right.
I have to be real crazy, like have to be like Last Podcast on the Left style money coming in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I've been on Libsyn since I started. And I mean, I haven't used Podbean, but I think they're fairly similar.
I think it's very similar. Those were the two I was looking at. And I don't even remember why I chose. You know what? I think I chose Podbean because OK Talk was on there.
Okay.
It's just like, okay, I know Clint. I know OK Talk. Fine. That's,
done. Podbean it is. Yeah.
Otherwise, they were, virtually the same, I think.
Yeah. That's great, though. That's great. But it's like you said, if it's gonna even cut 20 minutes out of the process, that's 20 minutes you can put focus in elsewhere. And every minute is it counts. It's so valuable.
Yeah. I read some article about, basically, they were talking about creative people, and they said, you don't understand, like, time is the most valuable thing of all to creative people. So when you do something that's just, like, sucking their time, it's like you're making them miserable.
Well, that's the truth. Oh, man, that is the absolute truth.
Yeah, it's like we're looking for any moment to just kind of cram whatever else in.
Oh, yeah.
That we can get going here. So when you do your stories, the fiction...
Mm-hmm.
Are you just basically, reading the stories? Is it like, like an audiobook, in other words?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's an audiobook. I narrate it myself. Occasionally, if I'll do some things, I'll bring in a couple fellow podcasters to do some maybe extras on the side, depending what the project is. Or, I had one story about this couple that goes on vacation and they somehow end up at the Clown Motel, which was splashed all over the internet a couple of years ago.
I remember.
So the story is based kind of on that location. I know, kind of tropey and cliche, but it was fun. I had to write it. But I had a friend of mine do like voice. She was like one of the women, the woman on the trip with the husband, and she was calling her sister with these voicemails that were kind of getting increasingly more frantic. And so it's been fun to kind of pull friends in to do some stuff like that kind of adds to the atmosphere of the story before the story drops. But then the actual story will just be me doing the narration, and there'll be some sound design, some scoring, some music behind certain ones of them. Not all of them, but for most of the books, I go, all out with that stuff.
Nice. That's cool.
It's a lot of fun. It's and as you know, it's, podcasting, it takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of time and focus and energy, but I hadn't realized how much I missed it until I got back into doing it again, full stride.
It's a very, very satisfying medium. Yeah. I used to make fanzines, talk about old school, goth stuff. Like, make fanzines back in the day. And, I always thought, websites are kind of like that. People can put up with it, but they never quite had the feeling, but podcasts really capture that feeling for me.
Yeah,
that where you're just, it's just people who are interested in stuff, and they're making these podcasts, whether they're fiction or they're exploring nonfiction topics, whatever it is, and it's just these passion projects that people are putting out there, and it's I've just been really, really fascinated by it. And I'm late to the game. I came in late. I didn't even know what a podcast was probably 5 years ago. I'd heard the word, but I probably hadn't listened to one, and then started listening and very quickly went, I want to do this. Like, this is fun.
And I'm grateful for, and I like how you describe it, that you're late to the game. But the great thing is you're getting people, content producers like yourself, that are late to the game, but they embody the same spirit of podcasting that was there in 2005 and 2006 with this passionate, great content and this like zero ego and just there for, you know, the community. And it just, it's refreshing because also seeing at the same time these other, you know, podcasts springing up that are very, you know, I'm not bashing any huge podcasts, but there's a different feel with some of these, you know,
yes,
more corporate sponsored kind of podcasts. And there's some that I listen to and that I really enjoy. But at the same time, that's has that untouchable feel of that, you know, that's on this, you know, you can't get to it other than what's in your earbuds, but
right,
there's a sense of accessibility, even if you're not reaching out to someone doing a podcast like CreepyPod, for example, like even if you're not reaching out to them, you still feel like, you know, you're on the same level. You're together in this thing. And I think that is, again, one of the great things about it and about newcomers like yourself, you know, as you put yourself late to the game. I'm grateful for people like yourself that are still getting into the game, because I feel like that is what's going to keep podcast alive. Not the big AAA podcasts, you know, as they're described, but
I agree,
people like yourself.
1,000%. I think the challenge going forward that we're going to have is big media has looked, you know, their eye has turned towards podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend who works for a major radio corporation. And he told me their podcast division brought in more money than their terrestrial radio division last quarter.
Wow.
So you know where their eyes are looking right now.
Oh, yeah.
So the challenge going forward for the little guys like us, the independent people,
mm-hmm,
is
mm-hmm,
going to be getting that space on the front page of these,
yeah,
podcatchers and so forth, or getting the recommendations, because it's very quickly going to turn into a pay-to-play situation if it hasn't already. I think it might have gone that way already. I've had some indications where certain podcatchers I've contacted, and mm-hmm, no, they will not answer me straight whether it's pay-to-play to get on their recommended stuff.
And the fact that they can't answer directly, I think that is telling in and of itself.
Exactly. So where there's money for placement, you know, and I mean, music's been this way for years. If you want to, mm-hmm, be on the end cap in the record store, you're paying for it.
Oh, yeah.
People think that, and I did too. I was naive. I ran a record label for years before I realized this. People think it's like the employees choose their favorite records and put it on the end cap. No.
No.
That's paid placement. They are paid to be, even these tiny like Joe's Record Bar from, you know, Albuquerque, New Mexico or whatever. It's paid placement to be on the end cap. They're paying to be there. So the big record labels, for instance, can afford to do that. And they'll pay for everything to be up there.
Yeah.
And the little guys can't. And that's why you don't often see them there.
Yeah,
I fear that podcasting is kind of headed that way a little bit. But, you know, we can fight it with listeners.
Well, that's the thing.
And that's the best thing about the internet, because that's the great equalizer. Because people will listen to what they like. It doesn't matter who produces it. They'll listen to what they like.
So. Yeah, exactly. And that's it. And as long as people are there, you know, as long as the listeners are there to evangelize the content that they love, then I think that, like you said, the great equalizer. And I think that will continue. I don't think that's going to change.
Right, yeah. Unless something drastic happens with, you know, the net neutrality or something.
But, right.
You know, the way things look right now, it's, you know, it's an uphill battle. It seems like it's going to be, but it's okay. I think we'll still, you know, because people are going to keep making content because we can.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Because we can't stop.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So give your websites again, just to round it up.
And that's super kind of you, and I really do appreciate that. And I want to thank your listeners for not hopefully thinking I'm a douchebag.
Oh, no. Once again, Phil didn't mention any of this in his emails. He mentioned his two stories, and that's, you know, all he came to talk about. But I can't let go when I hear podcast and books. I have to talk about that, too.
All right, websites. So the best way to get at my content will be patreon.com/Phil Rossi. And there is free content available on there, so you don't actually have to pledge to get access to some of the content. I have been doing free stories every month, every other month, so we've got some of that up there. And then philrossimedia.com, which will lead you to my music and some of that part of the experience.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for sharing your story.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, thanks for doing this phenomenal podcast. I feel like it has really brought me closer to some of these topics that I used to be so passionate about, and is kind of driving my desire to take the new podcast to better levels here. And so I couldn't be more excited. And, you know, it's funny, on a side note, and you can cut this part off, you know, I live in Northern Virginia, very close to all these amazing battlefields. And so I think there's the opportunity to kind of experience some of this stuff again is pretty much right in my backyard. So, excited to maybe even get out there and to see if I still have that same sort of sensitivity to this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Be careful, but go for it.
Yeah. I don't want to bring anything home with me because I think my wife will be really pissed. Awesome. Well, thank you again so much for having me on the show, and it's been great.
Sure thing. Thank you, Phil. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back next Thursday with another episode of Strange Familiars. I want to thank Eric C. for the PayPal donation. Eric has been giving us PayPal help on a regular basis, so thank you, Eric. Remember, you can always find us at strangefamiliars.com. All of that contact information goes to me. Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Holler Arts, music, books, art, podcasts, and more, darkhollerarts.com. Intro and background music is by Stone Breath. Go to stonebreath.bandcamp.com for more. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/strangefamiliars, where you can also join the Strange Familiars gathering group, and we're on Instagram @strangefamiliars.
Let me not think on you. Let me still portray springtime with its flowered view. The wave that ebbs away.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.